While selling soda and popcorn for a chain movie theater during the 1950s and 60s, David Wallerstein had a revelation. It was very difficult to persuade customers to buy more than one soda or bag of popcorn for themselves at a time. But they were willing to pay for a larger portion of soda or popcorn up front. Wallerstein did not forget this when he became an executive for McDonald's restaurants during the 1990s. So when McDonald's was working on a promotion for the movie Jurassic Park, he had an idea. Give customers the option of a larger portion of fries and drink for a little extra money. Now, during the movie promotion, the larger portions were called dino-sized. Afterward, McDonald's kept the idea and coined a new word for it, supersize. Supersize refers to either the largest size fries or drink available or a larger portion of one of those for an additional 39 cents. So, as you may remember, after taking a customer's order, the employee would ask, "Would you like to supersize that?" Supersizing was very well received by the American public, so much so that other fast food chains quickly offered their own versions. It played very well to the understanding that more and bigger are better. Now, the term supersize may have been new, but the idea apparently was not. According to Brian Wansink, a food behavior scientist, even the Last Supper has been supersized over time. I'm not kidding. In fact, the paintings of Jesus' last meal with his disciples has grown by biblical proportions, shall we say, over the last 1,000 years or so. Now, Wansink reached this conclusion after conducting a study at Cornell University involving portion sizes in 52 of the best-known paintings of the Last Supper. Computer technology allowed him to scan and rotate the images and then compare the size of the foods to the size of the disciples' heads. And what he discovered was that the portion sizes in the paintings grew substantially. The main dish by 69%. The size of the plate by 66%, and the bread by 23%. Now, admittedly, the study does not offer much in terms of scientific or practical relevance. We don't have to conduct a study to know that portion sizes have been on the rise for a very long time. Nor has there ever been an issue raised about the disciples somehow being overeaters. But this does illumine a mistaken belief that somehow the Last Supper is about the food. Now, we know better than that, of course. We know that the Last Supper is not about the food. This is the night on which Jesus shares his final meal with his disciples. As Paul and three of the Gospels tell us, during that meal, Jesus takes ordinary bread and wine, blesses them, and identifies them with his body and blood, which are about to be broken and shed on the cross. Then he commands them to do this in remembrance of me. Now, we know this as the institution of the Lord's Supper, or Holy Communion, Christ present in bread and wine, the sacrament of Jesus' body and blood. Now, if you remember your prayer book catechism, or you attended our adult formation series this past Lent, you may remember that a sacrament is an outward and visible sign of an inward and spiritual grace. We might also think of it as a way through which God uses material things to reach out to us in love and grace. So in the case of Holy Communion, those material things are the bread and the wine, the food. The inward and spiritual grace is the body and blood of Christ, which we take into our very being. Our participation in this shared meal brings us into relationship with Christ and forms us as his body. And it is his body, the community, through which Christ is made known to the world. In John's gospel, however, this all happens in a very different way. In this gospel, there is no such institution narrative, no blessing of bread and wine as the body and blood of Christ. John tells a different story about Jesus' last meal with his friends. As the disciples are gathered before the Passover, Jesus removes his robe, ties a towel around himself, pours water into a basin, and begins to wash the disciples' feet. Foot washing was an act of hospitality which would ordinarily be performed by a slave. So it is no wonder that Peter emphatically objects to this whole idea of Jesus washing his feet, as strongly as most of us do. "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Peter asks. "You will never wash my feet." But there is more going on here than a reversal of roles. "Unless I wash you," Jesus tells Peter, "you have no share with me." But what does having a share with Jesus mean? To have a share with Jesus is to have fellowship with him, to be in full relationship with him, to participate in his life, which then in many ways makes the foot washing as sacramental as Holy Communion. The washing of feet is the outward and visible sign. And by participating in it, we are brought into relationship with Christ himself, the inward and spiritual grace. Now, as he often does, and like many of the characters in John's gospel, Peter completely misunderstands what Jesus is talking about. He gets caught up in, or perhaps distracted by, the outward and visible sign in the same way that artists have in their depictions of the Last Supper. "Lord," he says, "not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Supersize me." But Jesus replies, "One who has bathed does not need to wash except for the feet." You see, Peter thinks this is about bathing, but Peter does not need a bath. He needs to have his feet washed by Jesus, because by allowing Jesus to wash his feet, Peter is brought into a relationship with him which mirrors the intimacy of Jesus' relationship with God. It is a level of intimacy that makes people very uncomfortable. And it is clear from Peter's response that accepting this gesture of love, this level of intimacy with Jesus, is a challenge. It is also clear from Peter's response that it's hard not to get all tangled up in the outward and visible sign so that we might receive and know the inward and spiritual grace. Now, most of the time, when we talk about the story of the foot washing, we use it as an example of humble service that we are called to imitate, and it is that. Jesus instructs his disciples to do as I have done to you, in the same way that he instructs them to do this in remembrance of me. It is through this service that the community will reveal Jesus to the world. But let's face it, we are not always in a position to wash someone else's feet or to have someone else wash ours. But that does not mean that we cannot participate in this sacrament, because Jesus tells us what underlies it, what is the basis of the entire thing. Love. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. Remember, a sacrament is a way through which God uses ordinary material things, outward and visible signs, to reach out to the world in grace and love. And what is the outward and visible sign? You are. You are the way through which God reaches out to the world and is made known in the world. But there is a flip side here that we rarely talk about. Loving others is only part of the picture. We must also accept the gift of love that Jesus, through others, offers. We could say that we need to have our feet washed by Jesus as much as we need to eat and drink the bread and wine that are his body and blood. Because foot washing is not about washing feet, just like communion is not about bread. It is about our willingness to accept the loving relationship Jesus offers so that we can offer it to others in turn. It is about receiving the sacrament so that we might become the sacrament, the outward and visible sign of his inward and spiritual grace. And when we do that, my friends, we will grow God's kingdom by biblical proportions. Amen.